Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Bulls, your daily podcast on the Chicago Bulls. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play. Make sure you leave us a review anywhere you can find podcasts. You can email us with any basketball questions or advertising inquiries at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. Cody is not with me today. Got a better guest, though. Casey Johnson from the Chicago Tribune, the most tenured guy on the beat. We're recording this from a hotel room in Miami after the highly anticipated Dwayne Wade homecoming game in Miami. How you doing?
Did you just throw your co-host Cody underneath the bus?
I think Cody knows how. He knows how it is.
I believe you just threw your co-host Cody under the bus, Sean Eichen.
I think Cody knows how it is. But so this was obviously one of the more anticipated games of the year. There's kind of three of them. There was the Derek and Joe game last week when the Knicks came to Chicago, and then in December the Timberwolves come to the United Center with Tom Thibodeau's return. This was kind of the other one. This was the one that's probably the most of a national story in the NBA, because right. It's Dwayne Wade going back to Miami where he was for 13 years. He won three titles. What was your kind of feel of just kind of the whole event?
I thought it was a great night. I mean, I thought Dwayne obviously handled it really well. I thought he's been very open and honest and transparent about, you know, what this game meant to him, and also just the whole process of the summer. I mean, obviously everyone around the league thought that he was going to be back with the Miami Heat.
I know, I did. I think we all did.
I think he did.
I think, right, no, because I remember when the reports first came out, like, that he was, you know, going to take meetings with other teams, I was just like, oh, that's cute. He's going to use them for leverage, like, you know, Kobe, like, thought about leaving the Lakers in 04. Like, that was just kind of one of those things. But then, when he was meeting with the Bulls, it was like, oh, this is actually serious. I didn't really actually believe it until remember he went on Good Morning America, one of those morning shows, talked about it, still didn't feel real. And then it wasn't until he had his press conference at the Advocate Center where he was holding up the number 3 Bulls jersey, and I was just like, wow, okay, because he was one of those guys. It's basically, there was only a few of them left in the league. It was like, you know, if you could imagine Kobe playing for a different team, right, or Dirk or Tim Duncan or one of those guys. Dirk is the only one left now because Kobe and Duncan both retired this summer.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, kind of a awkward probably night for him. He called it the worst basketball game he's ever played in because obviously it was so difficult for him.
I couldn't tell if he was joking, but then it turned out, I think he kind of wasn't, because, I mean, we saw him in the locker room afterwards. He just looked like he was, like, just sitting back drinking a bottle of water, and he just looked like he was just so, like, he looked like he was relieved that this was just over. Like, he doesn't have to deal with this anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard when you're so associated, like you said, a franchise icon with one team for so long, and you go back and try to beat them. But I thought he handled the night well, and Bulls obviously got a very important victory.
This was a very important one. Now, were you on the beat when Jordan signed with the Wizards and he came back? So how was that? What was that like?
It was an awful basketball game.
I'm sure it was.
One of the least aesthetically pleasing basketball games I've ever covered, and I also covered the Tim Floyd era. So yeah, it was really bad. So yeah, that was also a weird night. I'm kind of a traditionalist. I kind of like to see those one franchise players.
Right. It took me a while, a couple of summers ago, when the Celtics did the Garnett-Pierce trade. Like, I know Garnett had been with Minnesota and then with Boston. Paul Pierce was one of those guys that, like, you associate him just with the Celtics. And even now, when he retires, he's going to sign that one-day contract and go with the Celtics. But there just aren't that many of those guys in the league anymore. Until this summer, Wade was one of those guys. He won multiple championships with the Heat. He was a Finals MVP. You know, he's going to get a statue outside of that arena one day.
Right. So, but, you know, obviously the only nugget of not really news, but you know, the fact that Pat Riley admitted that he finally sent the email.
He
to
sent
Wade,
the email,
and Wade received it, and
he received it, but he hasn't read it. So that's going to be our news cycle for the next like 3 days. We're just gonna every day. I guess they're not going to practice tomorrow, but you know, shoot around on Saturday before they play the Wizards. So have you read the Riley email? What did you say? Have you? And it's going to like go on all season. Like he's going to. I don't know when the Heat come to Chicago next, but like so. But like, so have you emailed with Riley? Has he responded? What did the email say? Like, and then try to get in touch with Pat Riley. Hey, so what did the email say? Like, this is just gonna be like we're gonna be reporting on like their conversation over time, and it's gonna be. I mean, it was already kind of an adjustment to having now part of this job be following Gabrielle Union on Snapchat. Now we have to, you know, care about, and we've already gotten past caring about one big story involving emails, unfortunately, and now we have another one.
But I also thought Dwayne was really honest and transparent about Pat, and I mean, I don't know, I may be in the minority here, but I feel like I believe in what he says. There's no animosity there. He knows how Pat is, and well, Pat's like, if you're not with me, you're against
me.
Right,
it's not personal. He's certainly not the only guy. I mean, you have to keep in mind, all three of the big three have left on bad terms. Now, LeBron was kind of not great with, like, he was mad kind of at the organization for, you know, cutting Mike Miller and doing some cost-cutting stuff, so he was mad about that, and then obviously, Bosch's whole situation is a complete mess. He wants to play. They don't want him to play because of the blood clots, and that's a really contentious thing right now. Shaq didn't leave on great terms. It's just kind of a...
You can go back to Tim Hardaway. He didn't leave on great terms. But a lot of the other thing is Riley's got that kind of sway and that influence that ultimately a lot of those guys end up coming back in good graces. So when you say Dwayne Wade's going to have a statue outside this arena someday, I couldn't agree with you more.
Well,
I
mean, Mickey Arison, the Heat owner, has already, like a couple weeks after he left, he posted an open letter on the Heat website that said, like, someday we're going to retire his number. So, like, it's already, like, there's no... Because obviously it was like the polar opposite of when LeBron left Cleveland the first time, and Dan Gilbert posted that insane, you know, open letter in Comic Sans. Exactly. But like, what was really interesting is like, you know, when a guy leaves a team like this, a lot of times among the fans there's like some resentment, you know, that he left or that he was just, you know, he wanted more money, and there's some of that. I feel like there was none of that with the Heat fans. I feel like they all get it, and they all, if they're mad at anybody, they're mad at Riley for letting him leave more than they're mad at him for leaving.
No question, and that's another takeaway from tonight, obviously. I mean, you were there, and heard it. I mean, there was universal love, 100%. Adulation, it was a victory lap.
When we had the Knicks game last week, there was, I would say it was about 70-30 cheers versus boos for Derek.
I'd go 80-20.
80-20, yeah, I mean... It was enough where it was noticeable.
Obviously. I'd go 85-15 actually, but whatever.
Okay, so we're just nitpicking here. Yeah. But the point being, there was enough of the booze there. There was a little bit of kind of baggage, like some of that was there. And I mean, I think most fans just kind of get it. I mean, Wade has taken pay cuts from the Heat for so long that all three of them took pay cuts in 2010 so that they could sign together. And Wade took a bigger pay cut than the other two, than LeBron and Bosch, so that they could keep Udonis Haslam. And then 2014, when LeBron leaves to go back to Cleveland, he takes less money again so that they can keep Bosch, because Bosch was going to go to Houston. And then, see, I feel like this time around, because Pat Riley met with Durant.
Right.
Like, they were one of the six teams that got a meeting with Durant. I feel like if Kevin Durant had said, you know, I want to come to Miami, Wade, you know, if Pat Riley goes to Wade and says, look, we can get Durant, you need to take a little bit less. I feel like Wade might have been okay with doing that, just because, you know, if they get Durant, they're a title contender. But, you know, he's not going to take less so that they have money to re-sign Hassan Whiteside, who wasn't even in the league 2 years ago.
The interesting question always will be, and it's speculative, will be, you know, obviously there's those reports of the initial offer to Wade being 1 year, $10
million. Right!
But ultimately they got up to 2 years, $41 million, and with Florida not having state tax, it's very comparable to the Bulls' offer.
I think it was more he felt like...
No, but I'm saying, what if they had made that two-year, $41 million offer initially? Would Wade still be with Miami Heat?
I think he would.
I think if
Pat... I mean, it was one of those things like, I don't know how much of a baseball guy you are, but back in 2007, the Yankees didn't fire Joe Torre. They just made him an offer they knew he would turn down, so they could, you know, save face with the fans and say, hey, look, we made him an offer. He turned it down, but they made him an offer knowing full well he wasn't going to take it. I think it's pretty clear that if Pat Riley still wanted him in Miami, he would still be in Miami.
Yeah.
But from Riley's standpoint, I kind of get it. You look at what the Lakers have been the last couple of years. They gave Kobe that huge contract after he was kind of past his prime as a player, and it just completely hamstrung them for years. And you know, now we're starting to see, now that Kobe's gone, their young guys are starting to develop. They're starting to have a little bit of hope for the future. The Heat were never going to have that if they're still building around Dwayne Wade, who's declining in physical ability. You know, if they want to rebuild around, you know, Hassan Whiteside and Justice Winslow and some of the other young guys they have, they weren't going to be able to do that.
Well, you also have to take that further and say, what did Riley know about the Chris Bosh situation, which is obviously very incredibly unfortunate.
Well, how about this, though? How much do you think, because Wade and Bosh are still super close. Sure. Like, I've been following them on Snapchat all summer. They hang out, their families hang out all the time, or they did, you know, when he was still in Miami over the summer. I have to think Wade probably knew something about how serious, and I know Bosh publicly has been saying, you know, I want to play, I'm not done, but I feel like Wade probably knew something was up, and that might have been why he was like, I'm not staying here.
Yeah, so anyway, neat night though.
Yeah, it was interesting. So about the actual game itself, I mean, have you figured out what this Bulls team is? Because I haven't.
No. I think it's, it's too early, but I think a couple things stand out. I think they've scored fine, and I remember some tweets I had early in preseason. I was like, I don't think scoring, I know everyone was fixated on the three-point shooting and the floor spacing, but I remember thinking they just had so much, they just had enough talent and enough ball handlers and playmakers that I didn't think scoring was going to be an issue. But defensively, they're still...
It's a disaster still.
I wouldn't say disaster, but...
They have three good defenders on the team, Butler, Lopez, and Gibson. And MCW's a good defender, but he's injured right now.
Right, right. So defensively, I think there's still a lot of question marks, and you can kind of tell, like, when they have it and when they don't defensively. Mm-hmm. I thought tonight they were much better.
As opposed to last night in Atlanta. Yeah. It was just... The Hawks were just getting anything they wanted, yeah, basically, the whole night.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I think it's going to be a kind of what we have seen so far. It's going to be a lot of up and down because, you know, they're good enough to score, but it's whether or not they can stop people to win games.
Right, and I mean, we saw a little bit better performance tonight from Doug and Nico, and those are two guys that haven't really been giving them much lately.
Right.
I think Doug was 1-for-9 from 3-point range in his last 5 games. He hit a couple tonight. Nico hit a couple of shots. Last night, the game in Atlanta was just kind of a sign that, you know, they just need stuff from everybody else, because last night it was just Wade and Butler carrying them. They were the only guys that were basically on Taj, but I mean, Taj is so, you know, underappreciated, and he does everything basically. But like, you know, besides Wade and Butler, they were just getting nothing offensively from anybody else. And with Wade's age being what it is and his health history being what it is, he's been pretty healthy so far this year, but you know that's going to change at some point, you know, if they don't start playing him less on some of these back-to-backs. Like, they need other guys to step up, and especially some of these young guys like Bobby Portis, who they was a first-round pick. They believe in him. MCW, when he comes back. Jaron Grant, when he gets in the rotation. Denzel Valentine, who was their lottery pick this year. They need something out of some of these guys. They can't just be Wade and Butler carrying them every night.
Right. And, you know, I thought Wade handled this stretch incredibly well. I mean, not only a back-to-back, but 3 games in 4 nights. And I think part of the reason, not only because tonight was a big game for him, big night for him, and a very emotional night for him, but they also recognized that going past tonight, they don't have a back-to-back the rest of the month.
Well, they have the Clippers-Lakers one, I guess, back-to-back.
But
not traveling, because those games are both
in
L.A.
Yeah, I don't consider that, yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess technically it is a back-to-back, but like when you're playing in the same building and not changing hotels, it's not really like, it's not the same kind of back-to-back. So.
And it's also, like, it's huge that they got this win, even though they, you know, at times tonight they didn't look particularly good, but just banking these wins, like that 3-0 start just built them so much goodwill, because if they had started... Because, you know, they had that awful stretch. They lost the 3 in a row, you know, to the Knicks and the Celtics and the Pacers. If they had started the season off 1-2 or 2-1 and then had that stretch, it's suddenly already, oh, what's wrong with this team? Can they put it together? The fact they started off 3-0, it starts off from the place of, hey, this team is actually better than people thought. And then when they have a few rough games in a row, it's like, okay, they'll be fine. Then they win that game against Orlando, and it's like, okay, there's still something there. So winning this game tonight, I think, was... You know, going into this road trip, they have this game against Washington on Saturday. That's one they should win. The Wizards have not looked good so far. But after that, their next 3 games, the first 3 games on the West Coast trip are the Blazers, the Jazz, and the Clippers. Those are 3 playoff teams. That could be 3 losses right there. So just getting this win in Miami, like, maybe, you know, if they have a rough road trip, it might be salvageable now.
Right. And also big performances tonight from Rondo, who has not been as good of late. And Lopez played very well tonight against a really tough assignment.
I've been saying since the Derrick Rose trade that Robin Lopez was going to be a solid player for them. There was you know, he's one of those guys, like, he doesn't really stand out to casual fans because his numbers, like, you can be like, oh, well, he only averaged, like, 12 and 8, so, like, he doesn't, how good is he? But he's just a guy, he doesn't need the ball. Obviously, tonight he took 20 shots, which Jimmy was kind of joking about after the game.
Everyone was.
Well, right, but Jimmy especially, I remember, so when we were talking to Jimmy afterwards in the locker room, and he was saying something about, like, that big possession where Robin had a couple of defensive rebounds and tried to put it back, and then it ended up getting kicked out to Doug for a three, and Lopez finished it. Wade yells across the room, "Hey, Rolo, way to pad your stats on that one possession." But yeah, Lopez, you know, shows up. He does his job. He rebounds. He protects the rim. He can score around the basket if you need him to, but you don't need to call plays for him to be effective. He was solid for the Knicks last year. I was surprised they gave him up in that trade, considering they had no idea what Derrick Rose was going to be at this point, but you know, that's a totally other discussion.
Yeah.
It's kind of been done to death, but Lopez has been solid.
And Fred decided to close with him tonight, which he hasn't done very often. There's only been, I think, one or maybe two other fourth quarters where Robin's been out there as much as he was tonight. So obviously,
I think part of that was just because he matches up so well with Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah.
Whiteside's numbers were great tonight, but like, Lopez is the only guy on that roster that you can even think about putting out there to contend with him.
Right, and obviously, Whiteside had a huge night statistically.
20 and 20, yeah.
But Lopez made him work for it, number one, and also Lopez had 16 and 9 himself. So yeah. I mean, they almost offset him. So that was an interesting rotational move, and to me, the right rotational move tonight.
I have to give Fred credit for that one. You know, I've been pretty critical of some of his late rotations in some of these games. Like last night, I thought he stuck with Bobby Portis way too long in the fourth quarter when he just did not have maybe the best stretch he's ever had in the NBA. To put it kindly, but so you know, I have to give him credit for you know seeing that this was a matchup that worked well for them and sticking with it, and not just like trying to put Portis out there and force something to happen, or trying to force something to happen with Mirotić or something like he's been doing in some of these other games.
Right. Yeah, and you mentioned Mirotić. I mean, he's been in just a brutal slump. He was 2 for 18 his last three games, 1 for 13 from three, and get him in double digits tonight is obviously something good. You know, the thing about Mirotić that I wrote about this a little bit for tomorrow is, in those first five games, even some of the games he didn't shoot that great.
Right. He was doing other stuff.
He was doing other stuff, and that was what stood out about these last three games. He didn't shoot the ball well in Atlanta, and he was an abomination at the defensive end. They just went right at him. And so tonight, not only to get 10 points, but then to be a little bit engaged on the defensive end.
He had a couple of interesting possessions.
Yeah. There was, it's still Nico, but...
All right, yeah. there was one where Justice Winslow, I think it was in the third or fourth quarter, where Justice Winslow was taking a three, and Nico was standing like 5 feet... to the right of him, and he just like, as Justice Winslow was like about to release the ball, he was like, "Oh, I need to go close out." He just like stood up.
Yeah, he still has his moments.
He has his moments.
But it was, a lot. You got a lot of different contributions tonight. Obviously,
yeah, and this is kind of what they need, and
right.
You know, this is what they need to do basically until. And it's kind of scary to say for a guy who wasn't even on the team 2 weeks ago how much they miss MCW. But like without him, they don't really have that solid backup point guard, and they have to kind of piece together some of these lineups where. You know, they have Isaiah Cannon out there, and then Wade or Jimmy is the one bringing the ball up, or hope that good Rondo shows up that night. So getting MCW back, which, you know, on the optimistic end is going to be at the end of the road trip, you know, at the end of November, that is going to be big for them. But, yeah, they need more from a lot of these guys. And I wonder if he's kept the rotation pretty tight in these recent games. I wonder if at some point, even if it's not garbage time or a blowout, if we're going to see Jaren Grant get in there a little bit more, Denzel Valentine get in there more, or Cristiano Felicio, is it just because Portis has been playing better lately? But like, Felicio was ahead of him in the rotation the first few games, and I thought he looked okay most of the time, and he just has completely fallen out of the rotation now.
Yeah, they flipped him for Portis, so Portis is the guy now, and you know, I quite frankly think Felicio's probably played in his minutes a little bit better than Portis has
too.
In his. I mean, Portis had that one nice fourth quarter in Boston, the road loss in Boston, but otherwise I've been, like you kind of impressed with Felicio's minor minutes, so.
I think it's a political thing, sort of, because, you know, Portis was a first-round pick. They have a lot more invested in him. Felicio, for as much as they like him, and it's a credit to their scouting department that they've kind of just found him out of nowhere. He's a second-round pick, or not even a second-round, he's an undrafted guy who made the team out of summer league. His development is not, you know, as much, you know, crucial in their minds as a first-round pick that, you know, they drafted over other guys who are making impacts on other teams.
Right. I mean, I don't know that for sure.
That's just kind of
certainly a theory, but I don't know. I haven't done any reporting on that, so I can't speak to that. But I mean, I could certainly, that theory is plausible.
Yeah. that's also kind of why, like, as bad as Nico has been, that's another reason I almost feel like he's just never going to fall out of the rotation, no matter how much of a slump he gets in, just because I feel like...
Well, you can't take him completely out of the rotation. I mean, he's got he serves a role in the sense that he's a floor spacer, and he's a decent defensive rebounder, even when he's, you know... I know there's some games where he looks like he's never played basketball. Right. But he's still gotta be in the rotation. But you got to make a decision on that guy. This is a contract.
Well, right, and I don't know. Then that's the thing, because this is another. I mean, assuming it's, and from all indications, we're gonna get a new CBA, so there's not gonna be a lockout. I'll be really interested to see, like, if the salary cap goes up and they're gonna sign. Because, like, how much do you think other? Like, I feel like other teams at this point know that he's not
right
the prospect that maybe he was before he came into the league, you know, with the reputation that he had. I wonder how much money he's going to get and how much money the Bulls are going to be willing to pay to... Let's say the rest of the season plays out kind of the way it has for him, where he has some good games, he has his moments, but he hasn't really established himself as a consistent guy you can count on every night. I wonder how much they're going to be willing to pay to bring him back.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to guess, because you got to, if he's still in this inconsistent, you're not going to want to commit huge money to him. And I know the salary cap rising has skewed numbers, but I mean, you're still not going to want to spend that much on him, and certainly not go many years on him.
Right. But you know, at the same time, some team is going to be like, hey, he's a stretch four, maybe in a different environment. He could, like, some team is going to talk themselves into giving him a lot of, like, it's going to happen. But It's getting kind of late. We should wrap this up. I know you've got a early flight. Your flight back to Chicago is earlier than mine. But follow you on Twitter at KCJHoop. You got anything you're working on that you want to plug?
In terms
of stuff that you're writing.
I thought we were going to talk about Radiohead.
We can talk about. We could talk about Radiohead.
No, we need to do, since we're taking this.
R.I.P. Leonard Cohen.
Exactly. We need to at least acknowledge the passing of the great and wonderful Leonard Cohen.
The second worst thing that's happened this week.
Okay. I don't get into politics and social media platforms, so I'll let you say that.
But yeah, it's...
I will wholeheartedly talk about Leonard Cohen. Absolutely. You were lucky enough to see him live, as was I. And
how many times did you see him?
I saw him twice. Just obviously an important figure in songwriting history.
And he was also a guy who... Like, even now, his last few albums, I don't know if you listened to his newest one yet that just came out a couple of weeks ago, but his last few have all been really good. Like, he's 80, what was he, 82?
82,
and he's still putting out just incredible music. Like, yeah. It's so
rare.
Did you
read the New Yorker profile on him?
I have had the tab open for, like, a month. Like, I feel like I have with a million things. I still have the Springsteen Rolling Stone interview that I have to basically get through, too. But, like...
Read the New Yorker profile. It's pretty fascinating.
I'm sure it's... I saw all the headlines about, like, him saying, like, I'm ready to die, which... I mean, that sounded so morbid when he said it, but, like, you know, it's one of those things. Like, he's 82. He had a good run. It's not like...
Yeah.
And he put out so much music. I mean... It's not as, like, when I saw that tonight, obviously, it's awful and it's sad, but I was just like, oh, you know, he had a good run. It wasn't like Prince being in his 40s.
Right.
And it's just totally unexpected. But, yeah, he was incredible. The one time I got to see him, I'm mad I never got to see him do a full set. I saw him at Coachella. In 2009 when I was in college. And he wasn't the headliner, so he only played like a 45-minute set, but it was like a 45-minute version of...
Right.
It was like around that... You know, do you have the live album from London?
Yeah.
It was like around when that one came out. So it was like a lot of that same stuff, and it was the same band, and it was great, but it was only like 45 minutes, so I'm mad I never got to see him do a full set, but I'm also glad I got to see him one time.
Favorite song?
The Future.
Oh.
So what's yours?
Famous Blue Raincoat.
That's a good one. He's
like, I like depressing songs. Famous Blue Raincoat is possibly the most depressing love song of all time.
Absolutely. So on that note...
On that note, we'll end with depression.
On that note, R.I.P. Leonard Cohen. Casey, thanks a lot for doing this.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Yeah.